the importance of oral hygiene for your pets is it's a lot more important, actually, than you might imagine. Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. If your pet's dental problems go untreated, lots of problems can happen. Bacteria can move into other parts of the body, causing some real harm. And to prevent that from happening, we're going to hear from Dr. Sandy Sawchuk. She has some great advice to share. Plus, she has some information on canine influenza as well. She, of course, with the University of Wisconsin School of Veterinary Medicine, she takes time every month to spend with us to give us advice on keeping our pets happy and healthy. And Dr. Sandy, great to have you back.
Hey, it's nice to be here, Larry.
Let's talk about dental hygiene. Why do you need to worry about your pet's dental hygiene?
Well, you covered it pretty well when you gave the intro. You said, you know, it's a source of bacteria for the rest of the body, and it can affect distant organs like kidneys and heart and so on. And it's also a source of discomfort for dogs. I cannot tell you how often when an animal has come in and had a professional dental cleaning and assessment and treatment for diseased teeth, the animal goes home and the people were saying, I didn't realize how, you know, slow they were. They just weren't very happy. And now they're like a puppy or a kitten again. So, you know, we hear this all the time. And pets are so good at hiding pain that we often just miss that fact. And then, you know, there's the aesthetics, too. I mean, having a pet panting at you or, you know, sleeping next to you with horrible halitosis because the infection is just, you know, unnerving.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I mean, there are times where I've been in an exam room and I've almost had to get up and go out because the smell and how the people live with it is beyond me. But, you know, there's the complaint I get from people is that, boy, I have a hard time brushing my pet's teeth. And I admit, my dogs are really good about me handling their mouth. I started when they're young, and we can do it without any trouble at all. My cats, on the other hand, boy, that's a totally different story. But to make life easier for dog owners, there's a new dental chew that's been marketed by the Mariel Company, and it's called the Oravet Chew. They just got launched last month, and what they have in it is actually a dental ingredient that has been found for many, many years in human oral rinses, and the active ingredient is called delmopinol. Delmopinol. But what it does is it actually keeps the bacteria from adhering to the teeth. It kind of creates a slippery surface, and it dissolves very quickly in the mouth. They're pretty low in calories. They're meant to be used daily. And what we've actually found is that it will remove plaque and tartar from the teeth. There's a lot of products out there that say they'll just remove plaque. And that's that soft stuff, the kind of what you get in the morning when you wake up. You've got that, you know, film on your teeth. That's plaque. But once it starts to mineralize, that's when it becomes tartar and or calculus. And these have been actually found to remove after 2 months of daily use 54% of the tartar in the dog's mouth. So that is really helpful. And, you know, and you should always, before you start a dental program, have your pet's mouth assessed to make sure that they're not in too much pain to have to be chewing something like this, because obviously they're going to avoid eating them if their mouth hurts. So have the mouth assessed. If it's, you know, mild tartar, mild calculus, you know, building up on the teeth, then this would be something to try. But if your pet has some serious oral disease, we got to get that under control first, and then we can get into using some preventive care.
And let's talk about cats for a minute, too, because, as you know, my two cats are now on a chewable dental brushing kind of situation.
Uh-huh.
And we just started this from the last time they visited you, so it'll be. I'm looking forward to kind of having you take a look. I mean, they look pretty good. From what I can see, those cats do not like to have their teeth, their mouths fooled around with. But they readily take the little spongy.
Yeah.
Cleaners.
There's a number of things that are available on the market that are shown to be effective for oral hygiene in pets. And I always recommend for people, before you just go out and see some undocumented claims on packages, because you go into a pet store and there is all kinds of things that claim to help with oral hygiene and keeping the mouth clean and so on. But it's called... VOAC, the Veterinary Oral Health Council, and you go to VOHC.org. That is a group that actually, they don't do the research themselves, but they look at products and the research that the companies have done and approved products that have actually been shown to be helpful. And there's lists there for everything from food to treats to, toothpastes and rinses and all kinds of things that using them either alone or in combination are going to help make your life a whole lot easier by maybe not having to brush your pet's teeth if they are really resenting it.
Talking today with Dr. Sandy Sawchuk from the University of Wisconsin School of Veterinary Medicine. Join in at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org, or you can post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. We'd certainly love to hear from you. I want to talk about canine influenza with you for just a minute. Then Nancy in Milwaukee will get to you. But canine influenza, there was an outbreak in North Carolina. Is it here too?
It is, most likely it is. And this is the issue, is that there's so many dogs that may have very mild symptoms that it may go unnoticed or undetected. But there was just a big outbreak down in Atlanta where they had about 75 dogs come down with it. So it's really, we're seeing it everywhere from New York City, the Chicago area, the one case that was diagnosed here. It's pretty much, I think they've saying now it's been found in 17 different states. So we can't let our guard down. And it doesn't mean that you don't have to have, keep your dog in a bubble or, not board them. But, just be aware that if you have a dog that is elderly or maybe has some underlying heart or respiratory problems, keeping them, keeping a very close eye on them, especially if they're going to be congregating with other dogs. Right now, we don't have a vaccine for this new influenza. They're in the works, though. And I hope to get on the show in the next little while and be able to tell somebody or tell everybody that, hey, we've got this new vaccine out, because that's going to be really helpful. The current influenza vaccine, as I've said before, although it's helpful for preventing the influenza that's been in our area for the last 10 years or our country for the last 10 years, doesn't appear to have really any protection for this new strain that was introduced this spring.
And is it serious? I mean, you're going to lose your pet? Or?
No. I mean, actually, the mortality rate is pretty low. And the dogs that have died from it were, usually they're elderly or they have, serious complications. But I think that with supportive care, the majority of dogs, just like us with when we get the flu, can survive and do fine. It's just going to be a pain for the owner because they will often continue to cough after they've, quit shedding the bug for sometimes weeks afterwards. So it can mean some sleepless nights for everybody involved.
Let us take some calls now and go to Nancy in Milwaukee next. Nancy, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. We have a six to seven-year-old. He was adopted as a stray dog who has almost from the get-go had allergies, scratching his face, ears, and his anal area primarily, or going after that with his mouth. We've tried a number of things, and our vet finally said go to the special dermatologist and get Apoquel, which we now find you can't really get or depend on. Presently, he's on Temeryl P-tabs, one a day, she recommended trying Ultimino food, which we've started introducing, but I actually think he may be scratching a little more with that, although he wasn't scratching at all with the Temeryl. So I'm sort of wondering what you'd recommend as his long-term care.
Yeah, allergies are one of these things that they are never going to go away. And so it comes down to the earlier we start with managing dogs with allergies, the better success rate you're going to have later on. And so there's a number of approaches of things that we can do. You've mentioned some of the oral medications. Your dog is on a drug called Temeril P, and that's a really low dose of prednisone with an antihistamine added to it. And that has been found to help some of these dogs that are, you know, really, really itchy, just to make them, but we don't want to use it long term. That's the problem, because it is a prednisone and it's going to, you know, have sometimes long term effects if you have to use it every single day to be able to keep your dog comfortable. Just using an antihistamine alone may or may not help, but that would be something to consider as well. And then, you know, you mentioned Apoquil. This is this wonder drug that has very few side effects, is reasonably priced, and is just so effective at stopping the itch in dogs. And it's not a steroid, so it doesn't have the issues that something like prednisone would have. The problem is the company just can't keep up with the demand. And we have, even at the vet school, when we get a supply in, the dogs that are currently on it, that were started on it back, you know, a year plus ago, are the only ones that are able to get on it. We can't even start any new patients on it. And we are, you know, our hands are tied. I've had several people come in recently because their veterinarian said, go to the vet school. They have Apoquil. Yeah, well, we've got a small supply for patients that are on it, but we can't start any new patients on it. So it's really unfortunate, but that'd be something to keep checking back with your veterinarian. Hopefully we'll be able to have that available, and that's going to give your dog some really good relief. But, you know, when your question about diet and other things that you can do, I always recommend that owners do a food trial. And the trick with doing food trials is that you can't just pick any commercial diet, even ones at the pet store that say limited ingredient diets, or ones that have oddball ingredients like duck and potato, or you know, salmon and green pea or something like that. Because those foods that are just sold in pet stores are often contaminated with the proteins that most dogs are allergic to. And it is the protein, not the grain, that most dogs are allergic to. So you have to go with a therapeutic diet that you're going to be able to purchase from your veterinarian, that is usually a hydrolyzed protein diet, and they get that and only that for a good 8 to 12 weeks. And so that even means that things like their oral heartworm preventative, which may be a beefy cube, they can't get. They have to be on a different type of heartworm preventative that doesn't have any beef in it. We don't give them treats. We don't give them table food. They get that and only that to see what kind of itch relief we get. Obviously, dogs that have allergies are scratching themselves like mad, and we have to treat the secondary infections. I had a dog in yesterday that the owner was complaining is licking at their feet, and flipped all the feet over, and just bright red between the pads of the feet. And I did some impression smears from in there and found that the dog has a secondary yeast infection. And so not only has the dog got seasonal allergies and is allergic to things probably outside since it's just seasonal, it also now has a yeast infection that we have to address. And so we getting that under control is going to be important to be able to give the dog some relief as well. And then, you know, the other things to be talking to your veterinarian about would be, you know, should we be doing allergy testing? Allergy testing is tricky. There's blood testing as well as, skin testing that you can do. The problem with the blood testing is that a lot of times people will have it done for food allergies, and it's very unreliable for that. So save your money. Don't do it for food allergies, but it would be helpful for environmental allergies. And so, and sometimes we won't get a positive result back, but you come back later and you retest them, and now you've got a positive result. So just because you get one, negative, oh, your dog isn't allergic to anything, don't give up. You may want to consider going back and having that done again, because long-term strategy is to desensitize your dog to what they're allergic to, and that's either with allergy injections or the new sublingual drops that the dog is given on a daily basis, which is really easy to do. You don't have to handle needles and vials and things, and dogs like it, and owners like the convenience as well.
Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Our guest today, Dr. Sandy Sawchuk from the University of Wisconsin School of Veterinary Medicine, taking a look at your pet's health. Dave Potratz, Cheyenne Lentz producing today. I'm Larry Mueller on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Right now, visiting with Dr. Sandy Sawchuk from the UW School of Veterinary Medicine about your pet's health. Let's take some more questions, and let's go to Bellevue next and turn to Autumn. Autumn, hi. Thank you for calling.
Thank you for having my call. I have a 40-pound Basset Hound that I rescued in November, and I have to relocate from Wisconsin to the state of Washington, and I'm scared that I have to sedate him if I fly him there, and he's never been in a crate that I'm aware of. So how would I go about
getting your dog,
preparing him for this? And I'm scared about sedating him because I've never sedated a dog before.
Yeah.
And I know I have to get a wellness check a month before, and I have to give him a boarding check because I talked to my vet about that. But otherwise, when I look for information, it's very confusing.
Yeah. Yeah, it's you know, flying your pet when they're on board with you, it's not a big deal. I mean, because they're right there with you. But obviously, your dog is too big to be able to go under the seat, and so we'll have to go in the belly of the plane. And that is one of the issues is they have to be in a crate, obviously. And so desensitizing your dog to sitting and being comfortable and quiet in the crate is going to be your first step. So long before you need to travel, get a crate that is, you know, airline approved, and have it set up in the house, throw treats in, maybe even, excuse me, have the door off so that the dog doesn't have, you know, feel like they're going to get trapped in there. So they get comfortable with it. And eventually, you know, you put treats in and you shut the door and they get to stay in there, you know, for a little bit of time, but make it a really comfortable experience for them. Then your next step is to actually have that crate in a vehicle and see how the dog does in there with it moving, because you're going to have to be driving to the airport and then on the airplane. You're right about needing a health certificate. And so having your dog assessed, and it really depends on the airline what they want. Health certificates are only good for 30 days. And so going a month before you go, you really don't have a lot of leeway. So you may want to check on that and may even get it done a little closer to when you're going to be flying. Be careful about sedating your dog. I really don't like to use sedatives when we can't be there to watch the dog. That's actually been found to be the number one cause of death in dogs that are flying are the drugs that are used to make them calm in the carrier, because it lowers their blood pressure. They may not be able to thermoregulate as well. They may vomit and aspirate, and you know, no one's there to be able to be watching them. So I would avoid using drugs, and that's where the training comes in at home ahead of time. You know, there are things that you can use that are kind of natural calming agents, some herbal remedies that may or may not help that you can get over the counter at the pet store. There's a medication called Anxietane, which is a an over-the-counter medication that is a milk-type protein that has been found to be effective in some dogs that are really anxious too. And it's not going to have the side effects of prescription medications that we would be able to give you under other circumstances. So, you know, look into using something like that, and have a dry run at home before you go, just to make sure that your dog tolerates them and isn't going to have any adverse effects. And then the other thing that you're going to need to be aware of is the temperature regulations. If on the health certificate, no airplane will take a dog if it's going to be over 80 degrees on either end of the trip. So you have to plan the day you travel and the time of day you travel very carefully, so that if you are traveling during the warm weather, you're not stuck at the airport with the dog because they're not going to take them because it's going to be too hot being out on the runway and things with them. So watch the temperatures. And then on the other end, if your dog is cold adapted, the health certificates you can actually write in, and you can sign that my dog is cold adapted below a certain temperature. And so winter flying usually isn't that bad, because you can, you know, have that little statement signed and you're home free. But it's the other end when it's hot that's going to be a problem. The other thing is, consider driving. It might be a little bit longer for you, but if your dog tolerates being in the car, by all means, consider doing that. It might be the best for both of you.
All right. Autumn, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Good advice, Sandy. We have more callers online. You can join in, too, by the way. The number to call, 1-800-642-1061. 1234. And email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Let's turn to Dale next in De Pere, Wisconsin. Dale, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. What's on your mind?
Well, I've got a 4.5-year-old female spade cocker, and approximately a couple years ago, she developed allergies of some sort where she gets her entire bottom side gets full of red sores. Her back will get, like, little scabs all over. We've been to the vet multiple times. The first time she thought it was just dry skin, it's normal, but we knew it wasn't. We brought her back again. She gave her a shot of cortisone, which worked for, like, 1.5 to 2 months. We switched dog foods, went to an all-natural dog food at a health food store. I've been giving her half a Benadryl at night to try and stop her from itching, but she got better for a little while, and then she's gotten worse again. The only thing that's changed in our house that I can think of is approximately the time that this started, shortly after, we had new carpet put in our stairwell, and she lays on there. And that's the only change that we've done or she's had as far as habitat or anything that I can think that would cause anything. So I'm kind of stumped where to go next, I guess.
Yeah, well, we kind of talked about a lot of stuff with allergies with a previous caller, but you brought up a couple of really interesting things. One is that you said that you switched your dog to a natural dog food. And I don't know why owners think that if it says natural on the bag, this dog food is going to be better from the food allergy standpoint. All natural means is the regulatory definition is that it can't have any man-made ingredients in there. So they're going to use vitamin E as a preservative rather than chemical preservatives. That's the only thing that natural means. And so there may still be proteins and things in there that your dog would be allergic to. So just like the last caller, talk to your vet about getting a prescription for a hypoallergenic therapeutic diet, a hydrolyzed protein diet would be what you'd want to be trying your dog on. It sounds like your dog has a secondary bacterial infection. Those sores on the belly and scabs on the back, that sounds like it's probably a staph infection. And your dog is screaming for needing probably some antibiotics. And remember when we're treating the skin, because the skin gets such a low amount of the blood supply, you have to treat much longer with antibiotics than you do for infections that occur elsewhere in the body, like a urinary tract infection. So we're usually looking at a 3 to 4 week minimum period of time with an appropriate antibiotic that would be good for staph. And there's a very limited number of antibiotics that we can use that are going to be effective for staph infections. So that, and if your dog isn't getting better with picking an appropriate antibiotic and the sores are still staying there, we're seeing a lot of dogs who have been repeatedly on antibiotics have, similar to what we get, MRSA, methicillin-resistant staph aureus, is they get the dog version, methicillin-resistant staph pseudo-intermedius, staph MRSP, we call it. It's one of these super bacterias that is usually only responsive to, again, a very small handful of different antibiotics. So getting a culture done may be in order. Bathing your dog is definitely one of those things that dogs that have allergies need to be bathed more frequently. And if you've got a secondary infection going on, it may mean 2 or 3 times a week using an appropriate antibacterial shampoo, not like antibacterial hand soap or something that we would use, but actually one that's formulated for the dog. Don't use a hair dryer, that's going to dry the skin out. And so that's, again, just one of those things that is part of dealing with a dog with chronic skin problems. Make sure you're using flea control religiously, because one flea bite can, if a dog has flea hypersensitivity, can just keep them itching forever. So they can itch and itch and itch. So make sure you're using good flea control. And also think about adding in a fatty acid supplement. Besides the other drugs that I mentioned with the previous caller, fatty acid supplements sometimes help mediate the inflammatory response in the body and help decrease some of the itching as well. So I think it's time to go back to your veterinarian, get a diagnosis. Do I have yeast? Do I have bacteria? What's the appropriate antibiotic to use? Topical therapy, oral therapy with the appropriate antibiotic, hydrolyzed protein diet, And then we sit back and say how much itch is under control. If they're still itchy, then we may want to start looking into finding out what environmental allergies your dog is comfortable or is affected by doing some allergy testing. Really doubt that's the carpet. That would be just the ventral surface of the dog's body and not all over. And your dog's started to have allergies right about the time we normally see it, 2 years of age.
Well, there we go. Dale, thanks very much for calling. I appreciate your call. Sandy, we've had several phone calls from people who want you to repeat the name of the dental hygiene chew that you mentioned earlier. We were talking about the new things that are out there.
Yeah, it's called the Aura Vet Chew. So O-R-A-V-E-T.
Chew, and it's for dogs.
Yep. It's a dog one. They don't have it available for cats. These are not designed for cats. They come in three different sizes depending on the weight of your dog. And they don't have anything available for cats. Currently, the dental treats and so on that have had the cat approval would be things like the Greenies for cats, the Science Diet Oral Care, over-the-counter diet, TD diet by Hills, the Royal Canin diet, I believe, is one that's got the VOHC seal of approval as well that is for cats. So there's a number of things out there that we can use for cats, but unfortunately not this particular chew.
And maybe Cheyenne, put that up maybe on our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. The Aura Vet Chew is what it's called. Chris in Wisconsin Dells up next. Hi, Chris. Thanks for calling.
Hi. I have two stories that are in honor of the week that we are in, given the miraculousness of the Japanese culture. The first one, and I'm not trying to drag you into anything else.
Okay.
Okay. The first thing is that my sister has a Shiba Inu, and which is a Japanese mountain dog that looks like a little bitty husky for those people who don't know that. And this dog was a breeder, and she was kept in a kennel for all of her puppyhood, breeding miraculous little Japanese puppies because they were miraculous little Japanese puppies. And she was brought over to America on a jet, and she never, ever, ever has gotten over that experience. They have to take her into a separate room when there's a thunderstorm and turn the TV on as loud as it's possible and comfort her all night long because she cannot get over that. And so anybody that's thinking about taking their dog on an airplane ought to think about that.
Can I interrupt for just a second?
Yeah.
What I am concerned about is the fact that this dog spent its early and most of its life in a kennel and then all of a sudden was taken out of a very, you know, set environment where it kind of knew, you know, the boundaries of the cage that was in, to a home life that now has blue skies, yes, an airplane trip, but thunder and lightning and fireworks and so on. And if this dog had never been exposed to that kind of stuff, no wonder why she's so fearful. I don't think that it was probably the plane trip that triggered it. It probably didn't help, but it was most likely the early raising of this dog that just did not expose it to anything. And now we've got this dog that is damaged from the standpoint of it just doesn't know how to lead a normal life, that other dogs just kind of blow off thunder and lightning or, you know, travel or anything as, hey, this is just part of life and it's not a big deal. This is what's probably causing her to be the way she is.
And there's not much we can do? Or?
Well, I mean, I think that when we have a dog that's this fearful, that, you know, if it's got a you know, poor start in life, like it sounds like it did with not being socialized and exposed to a lot of other dogs and new situations and so on. You can try to start from scratch, and often we can turn them around a little bit. They may be better in certain circumstances, like, you know, if they're in inside versus outside, or maybe they're happier in a crate than they are out of a crate. There's medications that can be used that are anti-anxiety drugs that you would talk to your veterinarian or a veterinary behaviorist to be able to get them started on something like that. But there is no drug that's going to cure the dog. It comes down to very gradual exposure where the dog isn't nervous and then they gradually get used to things. So like in the case of a dog with thunderstorms, I think it's great that they're taking him in a room, making some like loud white noise so that they can't hear the boomers going on outside. But they may want to consider, you know, actually working with, sound effects tapes or something where they can have it down very quietly and gradually increase the volume so the dog gets used used to it, and it's not a scary event for the dog. And, you know, there's lots written on how to desensitize dogs to thunderstorms, and it's tough. It really is tough because we can't predict when Mother Nature is going to throw that at us, and we have to have the dog in a calm situation before the storm starts.
Yeah. Chris, thanks for calling. I want to give Pam and Wauwatosa a chance to join us. Hi, Pam.
Hi. I adopted, or I should say inherited, a five-month-old golden doodle who had spent most of her life in a kennel, except for 2 hours a day. There were other dogs around, and it was, but not many people. Anyway, and she was out of state, so we brought her home. And 3 days after that, she started coughing and had diarrhea very badly. So we took her to the vet and ended up having a chest x-ray and a stomach intestine x-ray. And she had kennel cough, and she had some obstructions in her intestines. And so she went on two different antibiotics for 10 days, and we can't get her system back. I mean, she's now on the IV food, but the stool is really still very soft.
Yeah, you know, when we have a patient with diarrhea, there are so many different causes. And what we try to do as veterinarians is kind of break it down. Is this small bowel or large bowel? So you may get asked very pointed questions. Of course, this has to happen right before lunch hour. Is there blood? Is there mucus? The frequency, the volume, those types of things to help us pinpoint where the problem may be. Being a five-month-old dog, the first thing on the top of my list is this dog parasitized? And I would be looking for parasites, and I would probably even treat for parasites, even if we didn't find any, just because they are so common, especially if this dog was around a lot of other dogs and came from a kennel situation. Probably the big one that gets, underdiagnosed is Giardia, because it's sometimes hard to find on your standard fecal flotation test that you may run in a vet clinic. And so there are some other special tests that we can do to pick up a diagnosis of Giardia. There's a little SNAP test that's called, or a Giardia antigen test, and that could be run along with the fecal flotation. So if you have not done that already, by all means, get some fresh stool, take that to your veterinarian. And again, even if it comes back negative, consider going through a thorough deworming program. And usually the drug that we use is called fenbendazole, or Panacure is the brand name of it. And we usually treat for 5 days, consecutive days, and sometimes that will get them better. If they're negative for that, you've got your dog on a low-fat, low-residue diet, that's what ID is, then if it's a chronic problem, we may have to start looking into doing things like a gastrointestinal panel. Your veterinarian may want to be looking at, if they thought that there was some obstructive disease, some special imaging, either barium studies or an ultrasound of your dog's stomach or abdomen, to be able to look at the intestines to see are they thickened, and trying to get some answers that way. I mean, you can jump right to scoping up and down both ends. There's a whole host of things that I call the GI extravaganza. But remember, common things are common, and get those parasite problems off the table. And I don't know why your veterinarian put your dog on an antibiotic. We don't see a lot of bacterial GI disease in dogs, and antibiotics often don't do a whole lot of good. So yeah, I'd want to question that as well.
Okay. Good luck, Pam. Thanks a lot for calling. Kathy in Forest County, you are next. Hi, Kathy.
Hi. My question is, I have five dogs now that the vet believes is canine influenza. And what I want to know is, we're treating them, and one of them is very sick, and another one is, you know, practically nothing but the cough. When they still have the cough, if it goes for 3 weeks, are they still contagious? And if they don't have the cough, how long are they contagious?
Yeah, they can be contagious for a couple of weeks after they're better. So they may still be spreading it after that. And you say you think they have influenza. It's such an easy test to do a respiratory disease screen. It's a nasal swab that you can send to the diagnostic lab in the state here. And there's other companies that are national companies that are doing respiratory disease screening as well. And I would strongly recommend that you get that done so you know exactly what you're dealing with. Rather than just making the assumption that your dogs have influenza. And for the one that's really sick, they may need to be hospitalized in an isolation ward with supportive care if they're that ill, because if they're you know, having problems with being able to eat or drink and are dehydrated, they may be in need of antibiotics, not because the influenza virus is going to respond to antibiotics, but the secondary bacteria that can cause pneumonia may be present, and that may need to be treated as well. So time to go back to your veterinarian and say, let's get a diagnosis and not just make the assumption that that's what my dog has.
There we go. Thanks, Kathy, for calling. Appreciate it. And Richard in New London will turn to you now. Hi, Richard. Thank you for calling.
Good morning. All I have is a comment to make. I was listening to the fellow that was having a problem with his dog with the skin irritation and the sores and stuff.
Yeah.
Where he had a new carpet put in a stairwell where the dog sleeps. Well, my sister has a cat, and ever since she brought the cat home as a kitten, it developed a rash on its stomach. And she would take it to the vet, and they're trying all kinds of things to clear up this rash on its stomach. The cat would constantly lick it, not leave it alone. Well, while this problem was going on, she moved to a different apartment with new carpet in it, and this rash cleared up by itself. And it's never come back, and this has been 3 years, at least 3 years ago.
Yeah, we do. Yeah. You know, we do see contact allergies. They're not that common, though. But what you're describing, the, you know, barbering the hair on the belly and the sores and so on, that can be seen with a whole host of other things. And one thing that pops into my head is when an owner makes a move, what are they leaving behind? I mean, she was in an apartment building that had other pets in it. Did she have a flea problem? And all it takes is one flea. And since cats are such good groomers, we rarely ever see fleas on a cat. But that would have been something that, by getting out of one building and into another, she may have left those little critters behind that was causing her cat to itch as well. So I'm just glad that the cat's comfortable. It had to be miserable while she was at the other apartment.
Oh, absolutely. Thanks a lot, Richard, for calling with your story. Talking today with Dr. Sandy Sawchuk, Professor of Veterinary Medicine at the University of Wisconsin-Madison School of Veterinary Medicine. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for joining us on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here talking about your pet's health with Dr. Sandy Sawchuk from the University of Wisconsin School of Veterinary Medicine. Questions? Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234, email at talk@wpr.org, or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. We had a Facebook question from Tanny, who says, my elderly dog has bad, poor oral health, missing many teeth, really fights me for any oral care, brushing or rinse. I don't want to stress her. Vet is hesitant to keep going with anesthesia. I hate to watch the teeth get so bad. What do I do? Maybe the Aura Vet choose?
I would be hesitant to have this dog, if it's got that bad of a mouth, to be giving the dog these chews, because it may hurt them to be chewing on them. So even though they're very flexible and dissolve fairly quickly, it still is something that I would be, you know, without actually having a look at the dog's mouth as to how bad it is, I'd be really hesitant to go ahead and do something like that. There's no easy fix for an elderly dog with bad teeth. But, you know, age isn't a disease. And if the dog's body is healthy enough to withstand anesthesia, and even like unhealthy patients with appropriate monitoring and care. To give you an example, I have a patient that is a cat that has kidney disease and also very bad teeth, and we got the cat in the night before and had diuresed them with fluids, meaning IV fluids, to get them well hydrated and kind of flush out the kidneys and so on. Had them in critical care overnight just for fluid monitoring, and then was able to go to anesthesia the next day. Everything went fine, and the cat went home afterwards. So it may mean, you know, a little bit longer stay, or maybe even a referral to a center that has an anesthesiologist on board that can be, you know, picking and choosing what drugs to use for your dog, but it's not impossible. And I think that I would get that looked into first rather than just putting up your hands and saying, we can't do anything. There's always something that can be done.
Let's take some questions again from the phones. Gail in Waukesha, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, I inherited a 9-year-old Maine Coon cat, and he's a sweet, sweet cat, but we only had him for about 2 weeks, and we had to go on a trip for 6 days. I mean, and while we were gone, the person that was taking care of him was concerned because he wasn't eating, he wasn't using his litter pan. When we got home, it was, you know, started getting things a little bit better. He's doing pretty good now as far as the eating. The litter pan, I think because he's outside a lot, I don't really know. But the other thing is, while we were gone, I don't know if it was because he was anxious and he missed us, he was rubbing, I think, on his cheek, and he's got a sore there. And I'm wondering, can I do anything for that myself? Is there anything I can put on that? I've been washing it.
Yeah, I'm really questioning that it was anxiety that triggered the sore in the face. I mean, we do see cats barbering their coat where they'll just over-groom that when they're anxious. Usually there's other medical causes, but there's a small percentage of cats that will just, like, it's kind of like a person biting their fingernails, except the cat is barbering their coat. The skin is usually healthy and normal, and we don't have an open sore. So I think that needs to be looked into. Things that I worry about is, does your cat have a tooth-root abscess? You know, is there, you know, did they get a bite wound? Because you said your cat was an indoor-outdoor cat. Did they get into a fight and now we have an abscess that is draining on the side of the face? I mean, there's a whole host of things that it could be, but I think the cat needs to get veterinary attention to be able to have that assessed and then appropriate treatment depending on what they find. One other thing that was kind of interesting, I heard you say litter pan with just, you know, one, okay, indicating that you had one litter pan. Having a cat, the recommended number of litter boxes that you should have in your house are, with one cat, is at least two in two different locations in your home that are at least 1.5 times the length of the cat's body from head to butt, and scooped and cleaned daily. No cover on the box. Some cats like covers, but the majority of them don't. And we don't want to have the box be in a spot near their food or near any big appliances, like next to the washing machine or the furnace. So, because your cat did have issues while you were gone, I wonder, did the pet sitter keep the box clean because he was maybe kept inside while you were gone? Did the, you know, one box just not serve his needs and he wanted another one? So you may want to consider revamping what you're doing for litter box management, because one in three cats stops using the litter box at some point in their life. And majority of these cases are because of management on our part.
There we go. Good luck, Gail. Thanks. Janine in Green Bay, your turn. Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Great. Appreciate the call. What's on your mind?
I had a dog that would eat burrs, and she did have a tumor. One old guy told me, maybe probably cancer. She had it about 6 or 7 years. Some of the guys said a benign tumor. Well, some young woman vet told me if she'd lose weight, that tumor would go down, which it did. Now, was there any connection with her eating the burrs and that tumor? And it had spread into her leg also,
okay.
Told me.
Yeah, no, I would not think that the two would go together. What we typically see in dogs that eat burrs, and I don't recommend that you let your dog eat burrs by any means, they get stuck in their hair coat sometimes when they're outside. And we've seen dogs develop some pretty serious mouth infections where those little thorns that are on all those burdocks get embedded in the tongue and the lips and even start scratching the esophagus and throat and so on, and really make the dog sick and uncomfortable. So if your dog does get burrs in its hair coat, clip them out, comb them out. Don't let your dog chew them out because it may result in them being pretty irritated. I've had a couple of patients in my career that have had to be anesthetized and actually have me kind of manually scrape their tongue and lips and so on, and just full fields under the microscope of burdock thorns. And it just, their mouth wouldn't heal until we did that and got rid of all those foreign bodies that were like embedded into the tissues there. So I doubt it's possible that if you had enough inflammation in the oral cavity, it could potentially turn into something cancerous. But cancer on the leg and burrs going in the mouth, I don't think there's any relationship between those two.
There we go. Thanks again, Janine. Tony in Mount Horeb, hello. Tony, are you there? We lost Tony. Let's try another caller. Let's go to Kim in Prairie du Sac. Hi, Kim.
Hi.
What can we do for you?
Well, I have a little French bulldog. She's going to be 9 this fall on Halloween. And she had significant back surgery last October, mid-back all the way down to the sacrum, herniated discs, degenerative disc, stenosis. So Ettinger Specialty Clinic did surgery, and not seeing a lot of improvement. Along with that, I'm going to add is, you know, dysplastic hips, which you, you know, see with that breed frequently. And so right now her legs are crossing in the back. She's crossing them. And literally she will just, if she's tired, she just starts to slide down and can't hold herself up.
Is she incontinent at all? Or is she able to hold her stool and urine?
Not stool.
Okay.
And we thought that that would improve. And that was probably 2 weeks before I had surgery, and that's when I was a vet tech. So that was when I was aware that there was a big issue. She's got good muscle tone there upon exam. You know, she's urine continent, though. But so, and we knew with the back, there were just pages and pages and pages of things going on with the back. So, I think of, you know, a 6,000 surgery later, you know, try to make her more comfortable. But I think in addition, the hips are also, and I'm wondering, I've got, you know, tramadol, I'm doing glucosamine chondroitin, I've got, I'm trying to think.
Like a non-steroidal anti-inflammatory probably of some kind, or gabapentin would be other medications.
Gabapentin, and Rimadyl, Ibuprofen.
So it sounds like you're doing a really good job with pain control. Have you looked into physical therapy for her?
Yeah, I did that. I've done acupuncture. And I'm wondering if at this point, now I know years ago when I worked that there was a surgery for the hips that they cut. And actually then that hip just kind of...
I just wonder how much of her problem is neurologic versus orthopedic. You know, if it was just her hips that were bothering her, I wouldn't expect her to be incontinent. She wouldn't be crossing her legs or displaying that kind of weakness. It would be more just pain related. And then, you know, if necessary, you know, for small breed dogs, there is a salvage surgery that can be done that's called ephemeral head and neck osteectomy, where they form a false joint. The hip joint is actually the ball part of the hip joint is removed and they form a false joint there, and it gets rid of the bone-on-bone contact and pain. But from what you're describing, it sounds like it's more of a neurologic problem. And, you know, unfortunately, depending on how long the dog was affected with disc disease compressing the spinal cord, there may be permanent nerve damage. And there often is no way of telling until after you've done the surgery to see what kind of repair you're going to have, and is the dog going to be getting better? So I think the big things are, you know, controlling her pain. Look into getting a help 'em up harness for her. They're available commercially, and it's like a little like suitcase handles on the back that the dog can they can wear all the time. They can urinate and defecate in it. They can go outside, but it gives you the opportunity of giving her a little boost up, which may help her in the long run. Really look at the surfaces that you have her walking on, making sure that you've got scatter rugs or rubber back mats, yoga mats, something down to make sure that she's got good footing, and that may be helpful as well. But I really don't have anything else I can tell you, except maybe consider getting a neurologist opinion on your dog's issues and whether there's anything else that can be done with that.
And Kim, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. We have Josie in Sheboygan. Josie, do you have a quick question?
Yes, I have a cat that developed, he started to be lethargic and he didn't want to eat. He's about 2.5 years old. And normally he plays a lot and everything, and he didn't want to eat, so I force-fed him some water and a little bit of canned food mashed up. And then I noticed he had some kind of a lump that at the back of his jaw, but it didn't feel hard, and I thought maybe it was the gland. And as it turned out, in about a week or so, it did go away, and he was back to his old self again. And I was just wondering what that might be caused by.
Yeah, it may have been an abscess, an area of localized infection. You're right, it could have been a lymph node that was responding to something, an infection in the mouth or something like that. But I'm glad your cat is better, and it's going to be a mystery, but lumps need to be looked into. So if when that occurred, getting him into the veterinarian, sometimes just a quick little needle biopsy, and you can have your answer. So
very quickly, yeah. And thanks a lot for calling. Dr. Sandy Sawchuk will be with us right up until 12:30 today. And certainly you have a chance to join in with your questions at 1-800-642-1234. We'll be back after the news. Thanks so much for joining us on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here taking a look at your pet's health with Dr. Sandy Sawchuk from the University of Wisconsin School of Veterinary Medicine. She comes by about once a month to talk with us and has some great advice on keeping your pets happy and healthy. And Dr. Sandy, we've got Georgiana from Milwaukee up next with a question for you. So
all right.
Let's go there. Hi, thanks for calling.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I have two male cats, probably 6 years old. They are strictly indoor cats, and one of the males always has discharge in the inner corners of his eyes, almost like a scab every day that I have to remove.
What color is it? What color is the discharge?
It's really dark, okay. Like almost black, and then if, you know, I take it off, sometimes the skin in the corner of the eye is pink. There's no blood ever,
mm-hmm.
But it's every single day.
Yeah. Is he squinting or acting like his eyes are bothering him?
No.
You know, when cats, their tears contain a lot of a chemical called porphyrin. And so when we've got like sleepers or like the normal material that would build up like in our eyes when we wake up in the morning, it actually builds up in a cat's eyes, it will turn that kind of rusty brown color once it's dried and be very dark in color. And so that's pretty normal. What isn't normal is the fact that it's adhering to the skin and causing irritation to the skin. And so, you know, boy, if the eyes are comfortable and there's no, like the face isn't wet with tears and it's just in the little corners of his eye, I'm wondering if it's just not his conformation, either like a deeper eye socket where he's got a little more kind of mucus buildup in that corner that is, you know, building up and adhering to the skin and causing the irritation. Instead of just pulling it off, one thing that I would be recommending is maybe using a little bit of eye wash that you can buy, saline eye wash at any drugstore. You don't have to use anything that's necessarily made for pets. You can use something for people. And wet a little cotton ball or something with it and soften it before you remove it. It sounds like normal discharge that is coming from his eyes, and he's just lazy about grooming it off himself. And it may be that just you working on it's a little more aggressive than we need to be, and using something to soften it may keep the skin a little more comfortable underneath it.
There we go. Good luck. Thanks a lot for calling. Diane in Lake Mills is up next. Hi, Diane. Thanks for calling.
Hi, thank you. I have an English Springer Spaniel male. He's 15 years old, and last October he had his first episode of idiopathic vestibular disease.
Mm-hmm.
And since then he has probably had maybe four other episodes at different times. He always seems to have them around the holidays. That's how I can kind of remember. So he has never recovered fully, and he kind of wobbles
well, he wobbles when he walks, and he'll fall over, but he has a very good attitude, very good appetite. He gets himself up, and, you know, he tries again. We do have a harness on him to help him.
Mm-hmm.
And then he wears the booties with the rubber on the bottom.
Good,
to
good.
Help his footing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he has had some acupuncture maybe about every 8 weeks since January.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm just wondering if you have any other suggestions for us.
Yeah, this condition that your dog has been affected by is also given the name old dog vestibular disease. And so here your dog, 15 years old, you know, is developing this. And many people will, you know, get up in the morning and there's their dog looking like it's been on a tilt-a-whirl. Its eyes are flicking. It may be rolling. It's the head tilted. Can't get up. It may vomit. You know, and it looks like I've had many people describe it as, I think my pet has had a stroke. But what we do is when you do a full neurologic exam, you find that it is the balance system or the vestibular apparatus that's affected. And obviously there's a lot of things that can affect the vestibular apparatus, anything from ear infections or things that affect the external part of that part of the nervous system right into the part of the brain being affected as well. And so I would assume that your veterinarian went through a full neurologic workup and discovered that there, you know, wasn't anything wrong with the dog that they could find, and so just chalked it up to idiopathic, which means we don't know why it happens, vestibular disease, and it can come over and it can come multiple times, and we sometimes see some dogs bouncing right back and being back to normal, but then there's others that are going to have residual effects. They just never get back to being 100%, and what you're doing is wonderful, being able to have like non-slip surfaces, being able to help them up. You know, I think that's really about the best you can do, is just modify his environment to make his life a little bit easier for him. There really isn't any medication or physical therapy or anything like that that is going to be able to help your dog have better, I mean, with the balance. It may help preserve some of the muscles and so on, and teach your dog, if you go through physical therapy, you know, and use some exercises just to be able to help with what balance they have and maintain that, but we'll probably never get back to where he was as a younger dog, which is unfortunate.
That really is too bad. I'm sorry for... Sorry for that, Diane, but, you know, do the best you can.
Larry, I wanted to just let you know I have a new dog at my house. Oh, my goodness. I have three now.
Is this the cancer dog?
It's the cancer dog. Did I bring him up the last time he was?
Yeah.
I was on. I did, and he's still hanging in there. His name's Lumpy Rutherford, and we don't know anything about him, but he's still fitting through the dog door. He has a type of cancer called a chondrosarcoma, which is really sad. It would have been able to be fixed if the previous owner removed the affected rib when it was small, but now the surgery would be too invasive to be able to have good quality of life. But he's having great quality of life at our house and is fit right in. So just wanted to bring that up. Still hanging in there. Yeah.
Is he still sleeping on the bed?
Oh, he climbs under the blankets. And yeah. And then turns around and comes up and puts his head on the pillow. So yeah, he's made himself right at home.
Oh, man. We had an email question from Sydney we should talk about. I noticed when brushing my 10-year-old Burmese Mountain Dog. Now listen to this. His rear end smells like honey. She seems to be licking that area more frequently. I'm wondering what this could be.
Well, I don't know any dog body secretion that smells like honey. If there was, my life would be wonderful.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
You know, it's like, okay, the back end, what could it be? Well, I mean, do we have a skin infection? That's not going to smell like honey. Anal sac secretion? Definitely not going to smell like honey. That's very metallic, foul-smelling material. Vaginal secretion, it depends on what the bug is that's causing it. Boy, I'm hard-pressed to say where that odor is coming from, but if everything's healthy, enjoy it. That's all I can
say.
Yeah,
why not? Well, we have a caller from Racine that I'd like to go to. Jim in Racine has a question, so let's go there. Hi, Jim.
Hi. Pleasure to talk to both of you.
Thank you.
I'm skeptical about these super-duper dog foods that are heavily advertised on TV, where the pet owner listens to the ingredients and chooses the one that he would eat. Are these dog foods really superior to off-the-shelf?
No. Okay, I'm going to say that right out. And this is, it's really, the dog food industry and cat food industry has really changed over the last 10 years. And there's, you know, the raw diet trends, the freeze-dried diet trends, you know, the like you said, the super premium foods. And I think you have to be a label reader as a pet owner to really understand kind of what makes some of these foods different and are they really different than other foods. One thing that manufacturers can do is if they use an ingredient that is wet, it's going to weigh more. And so if you say, they say something like whole dressed chicken, that's going to be the first ingredient because it's heavy. But if you use something like chicken meal, which is dehydrated chicken, it's going to be down lower on the ingredients list since that whole ingredients list on the bag is based on weight. And so what it really gets me is these foods that are, you know, on the front of the bag, there's pictures of blueberries and all these, you know, kind of interesting things that are supposedly making the dog or the cat healthier. And you start looking down the list and blueberries, you know, are following all the, you know, the minute amount of chemical additives. So how many blueberries are actually going to be in that bag of dog food that you're paying for? So you have to be careful about what you're getting. And there isn't a perfect food for every dog. That every dog can eat, you know, every dog's different. So you find the one that fits your budget, that your dog likes, that they have good stool consistency with, not a lot of flatulence, the right, you know, meeting their unique needs, whether it's growth to senior dog food or whatever. And, you know, don't make changes quickly. And if you do decide to change, do it slowly over a few days and really look to make sure that this food has gone through AFCO testing, not just formulated to meet AFCO standards, but actually gone through food testing, meaning that it's been fed to dogs and cats before it gets fed to your dog. And believe me, there's a lot of companies out there that manufacture food and it's not fed to dogs or cats in a testing facility. So we don't know. Pets are the guinea pigs.
There you go, Jim. Thanks a lot for calling. And Stacy on Oconomowoc, it's your turn. Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Great. Appreciate the call. What can we do for you?
Well, I've got a 6-year-old female cat who is just a wonderful pet. She's been fine up until about 6 months ago, and she's begun to throw up. It's not every day, but when she throws up, it's a good one. I've taken her to our veterinarian, and we've done imaging, we've done blood work, which showed a little bit of inflammation in the intestinal area, which I suppose could have been caused by the throwing up. We've changed her diet, although she won't eat what we've been giving her. They say the next step is an ultrasound to see if there's some sort of blockage. But my question is, I really don't want to spend $2,000 or $3,000 to find out there's nothing we can do. Would you recommend that I go ahead with the ultrasound or just wait and see if an inflammation goes away?
Well, the ultrasound, I know at the vet school, I believe a complete abdominal ultrasound is a little over $300. So I'm not sure where the thousands came up, but it's definitely much less than that. And, you know, it sounds like your veterinarian's ruling out metabolic things by doing blood work, you know, doing some, like you said, some radiographs, imaging. If they can do maybe some contrast studies, a barium swallow, I don't know if they've done that yet, but that might be something that they'll be able to see, is there an obstructive type problem going on. That, you know, again, that might be simple for your veterinarian to be able to do. It's a gastrointestinal workup, although it is going to be costly, is not anywhere in the range that you were talking about. So your cat shouldn't be vomiting that frequently. There's something going on there, and I think getting some specialized testing done may be in order.
Oh, there we go. Thank you for calling. Carla and Darianne, your turn. Hi, Carla.
Hi. I have a 2.5-year-old Chihuahua, and when she gets excited, she kind of hyperventilates.
Mm-hmm. And then as she calms down, it goes away. Is this something that she's going to have the rest of her life? Is there something we can get?
Yeah, there's two things that I would be thinking about that would come to mind. One would be that she's doing what's called reverse sneezing, where they get so excited that they start making kind of a snorting type sound, like they're trying to catch their breath. And the other would be that she, it's again common in little tiny dogs, called collapsing trachea, where the airway that is normally, you know, shaped, if you feel your neck, the cartilage rings will keep your trachea nice and round. These dogs are blessed with very weak cartilaginous rings, and so when they get excited and they're breathing in, quickly their trachea will collapse down and inhibit proper airflow, and they can, you know, really get into trouble. Usually that's accompanied by a real goose honking type cough as well. Other things would be heart disease. And I, you know, if she's been looked at recently, I would have to assume that somebody's listened to her heart to make sure that she doesn't have any murmurs or arrhythmias or any problems that way. But if that hasn't been done, that needs to be evaluated as well. So if you can actually get a video of your dog doing this and take that to your veterinarian, you know, we can't usually recreate things that the dog does at home in the vet clinic. That has been found to be really helpful. And that way we can see, are they, you know, wheezing? Are they coughing? And getting a, you know, having a look at a video like that. And it sounds like it would be pretty easy to reproduce. Just get her a little excited. So do that. And then I bet you can get some answers.
There you go. Thank you very much, Carla, for calling. Bill in Green Bay, what's on your mind?
Hi. Thank you both. I wanted to talk about flea control.
Sure.
I switched my dog to a different product, which is now Frontline Plus, and he had somewhere along the line picked up some fleas. And even though I had given the pill 2 weeks earlier, I gave him the pill a couple of days ago, and it did start to cut down on the flea. And I have used eucalyptus oil as a topical aid. Is there anything else I can...
So what oral tablet are you using? Are you using NexGard, Bravecto?
Frontline.
Oh, you're using Frontline as the spot-on product. Okay. Yeah, it's not a tablet that you're using, right?
I'm using a tablet. And for the topical, I'm using eucalyptus oil.
Frontline is a spot-on product, so I'm a little confused.
Oh, yeah, well, no, I give it to him orally. I'm sorry, I misunderstood you there.
Okay, but Frontline is a topical product, and you don't want to give it orally. It's in a little tube that you squirt on the back. So
I'm sorry, I said that wrong. Yes, you're
okay.
Right, I'm sorry.
Okay, so you are putting it on his back.
Yes.
Okay, so one of the things, usually heartworm preventative is given orally, and there are a couple of new flea and tick control agents that are oral products as well, one called NexGard by the Mariel Company, and Merck has one called Bravecto that are both very, very effective and safe to use. The big issue with fleas is the fleas that you are seeing on your dog are from eggs that were laid up to 2 months ago. And so the flea infestation started back then. And you're going to see, once you start treating the dog, you're still going to find fleas on the dog for a good couple of months while those eggs are hatching. But what will happen is that the flea control agents that you're using will kill the fleas fast enough that they're not going to be laying more eggs in the environment and keeping the population going. So, continue to use it. It's not that the product's failing. It's just that you probably had a bigger problem than you realized and started using it too late after you've already had a flea problem. So you want to, always start using your flea and tick control. And I do recommend year-round flea and tick control for pets that are living in Wisconsin, because we need that tick control even in the winter months. Deer ticks can come out when we've got warmer weather where, maybe it's in the upper 30s. And we sometimes, not all the time, but sometimes get that kind of weather even in January. So keep them on year-round flea and tick control. But, talk to your veterinarian about whether we should be looking into environmental control. Typically, probably just vacuuming and having your pet be the flea catcher is going to be adequate. But if you continue to have a problem, start looking for the culprits outside, because usually it's the nocturnal animals that are coming through our yards, like possums, raccoons, stray cats, that are leaving flea eggs behind. They're kind of like a flea salt shaker and dropping off eggs under your porch and you know, in the bushes and so on. And then your pet goes out there after they've had a chance to hatch, and the fleas jump up on them, and then you bring them into the house, and away the rest is history. So, you know, you may want to be looking for areas like that outside that you could be having, like a raccoon living somewhere that shouldn't be.
Rich in New York has a question for you as well, so let's go there. Hey, Rich.
Hi. Great show. Quick background. I rescued this dog from Craigslist last May, took him to the vet, got a clean bill of health. He's never been off the leash. I've trained him to be off the leash, and we play with a tennis ball, and I live next to a hedgerow, and he loves running down there. And does the doctor know about the carpal pad?
Well, the carpal pad is just the large pad that the dog has on the bottom of its feet. There's one on each digital pad, and then there's the carpal pad, and then there's a little smaller one up above that as well. And what's going on with your dog? Is it having some issues with the feet getting irritated?
Yeah, well, the upper one, because he charges after the ball, it gets irritated. And mm-hmm. I gave him a couple of days rest. And now he can play forever, but it's still irritated, and he licks it, but he's not limping anymore. I don't know, because I know some dogs that they have that removed. Do you think it'll strengthen up over time after I keep playing?
Yeah,
we don't
normally remove the little pad that is up, you know, the smaller one. Are you talking about the dew claw on the dog?
No, not the dew claw. This is above the dew claw.
Okay, yeah, no, those are. I mean, I would be looking more at if it is getting irritated, consider using something like Musher's Secret, one of those protective bombs that you can put on. You may want to look into booties, changing your exercise routine to, you know, just not have that stop and start. Maybe consider swimming now that the weather's nicer. That may be what the dog needs, just to allow this to get healed up. But and they're tough. A couple of days probably will not heal a pad injury. So you may be looking at a good, you know, 2 to 4 weeks of being kind of off their feet to get that to heal.
There we go. And thanks, Rich, a lot for calling. And Sandy, thank you so much. Boy, the time always flies.
It does.
Well, you'll be back September 8th, if I'm not mistaken.
That's correct.
Thank you so much. Dr. Sandy Sawchuk from the University of Wisconsin School of Veterinary Medicine. She'll be back again on Tuesday, September 8th. And so we'll look forward to that. So I think that might be the day after Labor Day, isn't it? The 7th this year, this time around? Just to let you know, I will be at the State Fair Park in Milwaukee at 2:30 today on the main stage. It's a Central Park main stage. It's kind of the central area of the fairgrounds. And we'll be visiting with a lot of people. This is UW Extension Day at the fair. And so I'll be talking with a lot of people about a lot of the cool things that are going on within the University of Wisconsin and within Extension. So that's going to be a lot of fun. Stop by and say hello. I'm on from 2:30 to 4 o'clock at that Central Park main stage. And thanks very much for listening. Tomorrow we'll talk with the author of a biography on Roger Torrey Peterson. It's called Birdwatcher. And then we'll visit about a new distillery opening in Wisconsin. Thanks for listening. Please stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network.